You're listening to People, Places, Planet, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit research and education institute making law work for people, places, and the planet. If you enjoy the podcast and want to support our work, consider donating at eli.org/donate.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. I'm your host, Sarah Backer. This May, in honor of American Wetlands Month, ELI is releasing multiple podcast episodes about wetlands, and this is the first in our series. North Carolina is home to a variety of ecosystems, including wetlands, which are some of the state's most biologically diverse habitat types. Wetlands are typically defined as areas of land that are either covered by or saturated with water. In North Carolina, wetlands are naturally found throughout the region and account for 12% of the land area. North Carolina is also among one of the fastest growing states in the country and is expected to become the 7th most populated state in the next decade. This growth poses a threat to the area's wetlands, which could be drained or infilled for housing and other development purposes. In this episode, I sit down with Sam Shores and Roger Hsu. Sam is a World Wildlife Fund panda ambassador, a marine conservation researcher, a filmmaker, and a plastic pollution activist. Roger is a senior lecturer in geology and environmental science at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And he's also a volunteer with several local conservation organizations, including the Cape Fear River Watch, the Nature Conservancy, and the North Carolina Coastal Federation. We discuss their efforts to preserve Wilmington, North Carolina's wetlands in the face of development pressure, and hear about what they propose for the area. Sam and Roger, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
So to start off, I want to hear a little bit about how you both became involved in conservation advocacy. Sam, do you want to start us off?
I originally moved to Wilmington to get my bachelor's degree in marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And I really started working from a fisheries perspective. I worked at the benthic ecology lab near the Eagles Island area and constantly around our wetlands on the Cape Fear River and the Cape Fear River estuary. And the more that I worked in the natural environment, the more I realized how much our area was being impacted by development and seeing some of these different patterns over the course of a couple of years.
Thanks, Sam. What about you, Roger?
I teach geology and environmental science here at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. I've also seen over the years all those changes that Sam mentioned with rapid development and really the loss of some of our natural areas in southeastern North Carolina. There's been some wholesale loss of some of our habitat through conversion, but there's also been some degradation. A lot of reasons why people have come to this area. It's not just for the nice climate that we have, but our natural resources, our natural areas, including wetlands and ecosystems, these really have provided lots of opportunity and interest to the public. And as we like to say, we want to take care of them because we don't want to destroy the golden goose. So protecting these wetland and also natural areas is just really something that's been a passion for me.
Roger, you just mentioned how important natural areas and resources are to your area. Can you tell us a little bit more about the North Carolina wetlands and what conditions they're in?
I feel the wetlands, some have certainly been lost, and there's certainly issues with water quality and degradation. Many of our wetlands are actually still functioning ecosystems. The real issue now is that over the last decades, with increasing population development pressures, and the new ruling from the Supreme Court in Sackett versus EPA has led to greater threat and increased uncertainty to the wetland health and protections of those wetlands. That new ruling concluded that waters have to maintain a continuous surface connection to rivers or those navigable waterways. However, everybody should know that water flows both above ground, but it also flows below ground in our groundwater. And these subsurface connections are really important to us. It increases the water quality, but it also minimizes flooding. So maintaining those areas goes a long way toward protecting not just the wetlands, but the surrounding waterways.
Thanks, Roger. ELI actually conducts a lot of research and analysis on the impact of the SACTA decision on wetlands protection around the country. So we definitely have touched on this already, but why are wetlands important to North Carolina?
To sort of start from a mix of an ecological and commercial perspective, we occupy the mouth of the Cape Fear River, which is North Carolina's largest river. One of the most important things that this river and wetland system provides is nursery habitat, as well as refuge and an area for fish to forage. We have a number of key species here that utilize this area that are commercially important, like our Atlantic croaker, spot, red drum, as well as other fish like striped bass or endangered species such as the Atlantic sturgeon and some of the protected species such as the American eel. From a commercial perspective, wetlands are crucial for maintenance and sustainability of our fisheries. From sort of a cultural perspective, we live in an area where we've historically had occupation on the Cape Fear River. Very early settlements, as well as some of the activities from early slave trades, have indicated that, in particular, some of the contested wetlands that we have actually been corridors for the Gullah Geechee people in the United States. In addition to that, these have also been areas where we've seen vast changes across the United States. If we compromise by allowing them to be developed, not only are we losing the ecological function that these wetlands provide, we also might overlook a lot of the history that could tell us a lot about our country if we turn a blind eye to that and allow development for development's sake. Both commercially, ecologically, and historically, we could really lose a lot of valuable information as well as valuable resources that our area depends on.
Roger, anything to add to what Sam just said?
Everybody may have heard the saying, no wetlands, no seafood, and that's really true for our shellfish and finfish, where we have a $80 to $100 million industry in North Carolina. Wetlands are very important for maintaining those ecological services. They really serve to clean our waters through filtration and biologic activity. Since we rely on groundwater for some of our water, these are zones of recharge for the surface water supply. Very importantly, since stormwater is one of our biggest issues in the coastal zone, these provide mitigation for stormwater. But that also provides for reduction of flood risk. And one thing that I'll mention that's really important to our area is some of our coastal marshes. They provide shoreline stabilization and protection for us during our numerous storm events.
So as I mentioned at the top of the episode, North Carolina is one of the fastest growing states in the country. How is this development impacting your wetlands?
Development is a pressure on our area, and it's probably the greatest threat here in southeastern North Carolina, particularly Wilmington or New Hanover County. It does have some areas where development is really in a boom state. And much of this area is actually containing hydric soils. Hydric soil doesn't mean that you can't develop. You just should be aware of the importance of them and the consequences of building on those. For instance, jeopardizing what I previously mentioned, such as flood or stormwater maintenance in an area where we're having increasingly wetter storms. And just as an aside, our area now has 5 more inches of rainfall annually than what it did in the previous century. I want to say I'm not against development. We just need to be smart with managed growth and low impact development. We want to make sure that some of those natural areas are maintained in their entirety. It's great to have our nature parks. It's great to have our preserves. They're absolutely essential to provide corridors and large enough refugia areas for our flora and fauna to be healthy and have a biodiverse community. And secondly, though I know engineers can build things to withstand flooding and sea level rise, but the question really is, should you do that in an area?
And I believe this is the argument that you make for Wilmington's West Bank and other natural areas where development has been proposed for decades. Can you tell us about conservation-related objections to the floated development projects?
For those who don't know about Wilmington and what the West Bank is, this area is very low-lying. There's a reason why people built in Wilmington to start with. Very short distance from the river, you get 20-plus feet of elevation. But over on Eagles Island, everything for the most part is under 10 feet. And in these low-lying areas, we have multiple events of high tide flooding. And we also know that projections for sea level rise are increasing, they're accelerating. We have issues to consider, such as ingress and egress safety issues. If you had a storm event, you got to have roadways that don't have water on them to get in and out. And there's issues with stormwater management and repetitive flooding of infrastructure, which is increasingly occurring in the Cape Fear River. And so anyway, we advocate for something very different for the West Bank and Eagles Island in particular, as well as for other areas. We'd like to see kind of a nature park that promotes ecotourism, education, cultural protections of these valuable historic areas. And one of the things just to note with this, the Battleship has instituted a project called Living with Water. Battleship is the largest or one of the largest tourist attractions in North Carolina and memorial to North Carolina veterans. And it has a parking lot that floods. So what they're doing is raising that parking lot and also putting in living shorelines and managing wetland areas to allow that area to kind of live with water, as we say. So we know waters are going to continue to rise, and so we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to live with that water.
Thanks, Roger. Sam, anything to add to that?
I think when we talk about adapting to a future that's going to have wetter storms, increased storm runoff, as well as sea level rise, and thinking about using nature as part of that infrastructure is essential. As we talk about increasing development, there's two really big indicators, I think, of environmental health, and that's going to be population density and percent impervious surface. So thinking about parking lots, pavement, and concrete, water has to go somewhere. And as we talk about these multifaceted projections between increased floods, wetness of our storms, as well as sea level rise, we can't continue to develop concrete over an area where water must move. That was one of the pinnacle examples of what made Florence such a damaging storm, because the surrounding areas around us, our major access points to get in and out, such as I-40, were completely flooded, and we became a legitimate island. So as we increase impervious surface, water is ultimately not going to flow like it should, as Rogers mentioned. On top of that, increasing the amount of pollutants in the water because it's not being filtered through wetlands, it's now going over impervious surface and oftentimes directly into our waterways, means that these natural foundations that we have, such as salt marshes and oyster reefs, can't filter pollutants and increased nutrients in the waterways like they used to. And so what often happens is we can see some of these artifacts of that, such as algal blooms or disease in the water column, which has continued to impact our natural resources. There's so many different directions we could talk about with how increasing development is putting pressure on our systems, but losing that loss to a natural filtration, as well as pairing that with things like increased flooding and sea level rise, means that the way we have to develop, we have to have foresight doing that in the future, because it's not going to improve the more we cover up these wetlands with concrete. And so we have to work with nature, but we also have to consider, is it essential to develop this area, or should we conserve that or have mixed use areas, kind of with the idea of the Eagles Island Nature Park to protect it and provide some source of revenue to the city.
Thanks, Sam. I think you did a wonderful job capturing why nature-based solutions and wetlands in particular are so important in building resilience to climate change. So you mentioned the nature park, but how are you hoping to bring more of this type of low-impact development to North Carolina?
What we want to do is try to make sure that the ordinances that cities and counties have really consider the soils and the importance of maintaining a larger percentage of these wet areas, because that particular area is one that, under such pressure to develop, once those areas are lost, they're not going to be coming back. And we just want to make sure that city and county development ordinances require a percentage of land that should be left intact, particularly, again, with large amounts of wetland. So I believe that we should have a review of the percent and types of soils that we should have in developing areas. We should always look at worst-case scenarios, not just a 25-year rainfall event model like a lot of developers do. One thing I want to say is that the obvious and worst thing that you can do is just clear-cut an area of the forest and remove vegetation from some of these hydric soils, because that's going to increase flooding. It's going to remove habitat. And also, the bottom line, it reduces the value of the land too, because folks will pay more for when you got natural areas. So all of those are just reasons why we want to think about conservation with development. I think it's really important that we be able to go out. And as I tell people, the old saying is we protect what we know about, but I want to add that we protect when we understand and know the value of something. And that's really the key to what we're trying to advocate to our elected officials, as well as to the community.
Yes, and I think that really speaks to the important role that education plays in all of this. So what are the different ways you are trying to increase education around conservation in your state?
North Carolina actually does have wetland program plans, and there's guides to common wetland plants. But it turns out that lots of folks, including our elected representatives, really have limited time to read and apply some of that knowledge to protecting these areas. One of my goals is to have students like Sam, who is so dedicated, be really involved and knowledgeable about our local areas. I personally would love to see our commissioners have an advisory board that could provide information. It's not that we know everything, but to provide the facts and perspective on what the value of some of these areas really are.
Just to add on top of that, when we talk about the environment, unfortunately, people just may not be familiar with that topic. And there's a reason that so many folks spend years, decades studying these issues, because they are complicated. And I think in order for us to continue to change the status quo on this, we have to have an informed public. And the pulse that I've gotten is that a lot of people do care about these issues. A lot of people have adamantly spoken out that they don't want the West Bank to be developed. There have been a lot of opposition toward projects like that. And it's clear that the public cares about these problems. There's just gaps in education. And as our area continues to change, as we have really exploded in our population, there's a lot of new people here. There are a lot of people who aren't familiar with the area and haven't had the time to immerse themselves in a lot of these important problems and the important areas that we need to protect. And so I think there's this huge importance of taking folks' passion for protecting these areas and really leading with smart development, pairing that with the information that they need to do something about it. So education, I think, is of the utmost importance. And if we can provide tools for people to engage with that medium in the public eye, then I think their passion will simply drive that change forward so that we can empower people to really continue to live, hopefully in tandem with the natural areas that we occupy.
So before we conclude, and speaking of empowering people, my last question for you is, how can our listeners become involved in wetlands and ecosystem preservation efforts in their areas?
I advocate that folks gain knowledge and then really participate in local decision making, attending talks on issues, becoming a member of organizations that support wise use, and of course, attending and speaking about the issues, you know, before our planning board and commissioners is really important. Those decision makers really are oftentimes dominated by business owners or real estate. Some of those have a vested interest in certain things. And so everybody needs to be able to provide information from all sides of an issue. I mean, it's kind of cliche, but individuals participating, they really do have power. And a collection of individuals really has real power. But you also need to have an awareness and also advocates in the legal realm. It's important to have these legal advocates. We certainly utilize them with Cape Fear Riverwatch and others such as the Southern Environmental Law Center. That's been a real advocate for our natural areas. They provide valuable information. Passion is really important, but to have the law and to understand the economic value of something with that passion really can lead to grand success. I might just mention something that's happened just within the last month here in North Carolina, since this is what we're talking about. Governor Cooper issued an executive order 305 to permanently conserve 1 million new acres of natural lands with a special focus on wetlands, believe it or not. And a second part of that was to restore or reforest 1 million new acres of North Carolina forest and wetland. Let's reward good deeds. And I think we should work to support initiatives that protect our valuable natural areas and resources, because the services they provide can't be replaced when they're lost.
Well, Sam and Roger, that's about time for today, and it was really wonderful to have you on the podcast to discuss the importance of wetlands, and I want to thank you both for the incredible work that you're doing to help preserve these incredible areas.
Thanks for listening to People, Places, Planet, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute. Our work wouldn't be possible without the support of people like you. If you'd like to learn more about what we do, attend one of our events, or support our work financially, head to eli.org.